Hi, this is Joe Castellano. Welcome to the Inside China Basin Baseball Podcast on thesportsvirus.com, featuring players like all-star catcher Buster Posey.
It's about, you know, just going out and trying to have passion for the game that I've loved since I was a kid.
Inside China Basin is brought to you by Sun First Solar, known for delivering solar excellence since 1984 and recently voted best solar company in Marin County. We're also brought to you by TPC Harding Park, the only public golf course in San Francisco, offering golfers the opportunity to play where the pros play. Coming up on a special edition of Inside China Basin, we're talking to Hall of Famer Mike Schmidt. But first, I want to tell you about my favorite golf course, TPC Harding Park in San Francisco. TPC Harding Park is closed right now per the city and county shelter-in-place order until further notice. However, TPC Harding Park is pleased to announce the 2020 PGA Championship has been rescheduled for August the 3rd through the 9th. For additional information, visit tpc.com/Harding Park or feel free to contact 102PGA@PGAHQ.com. Mike Schmidt joining us, the great Hall of Famer, three-time MVP, 10-time Gold Glover, 12-time All-Star, 548 career home runs. Mike, I had the great pleasure of working with you for a whole week out in Arizona at the World Baseball Classic when it first started in 2006. It's a week I'll never forget. Hopefully it's in your memory somewhere, because we had a lot of fun together, didn't we?
Yeah, we did, Joe. That was a lot of fun. And I believe the next year, the next 3 years, I think that was happening every 3 years, I believe, on Davey Johnson's manager, and I appeared on his coaching staff. So, yeah, I got to suit up and be involved in the World Baseball Classic the 3 years after you and I did our work there. And I remember that first night when we did a game, if I'm not mistaken. Now you can help me with this, but the United States played that they didn't we play one of those real young, I want to say inexperienced teams.
Yeah, South Africa. I remember talking to those kids. Yeah,
right. And like the oldest player on the team was like 16 or something like that.
Right.
I think they gave him a pretty good game.
They did, but they had to face Roger Clemens. One thing I do remember, is that Roger Clemens was on the mound. I mean, that team was loaded. Can you imagine those kids facing him? That was
right,
pretty tough.
Right, right. And I think wasn't that at the Giants spring training park?
It was. Yeah, we were in Scottsdale for that one. Yeah.
Right. So, you know, I've got memories of those.
Well, you know, it makes me think, too, like when you were first coming up, there had to be a pitcher that, you know, maybe not the same thing as Roger Clemens against these kids, but just a pitcher that maybe you had heard so much about that when you first stepped in the box, it could be a little intimidating for a young rookie.
There were several. I guess Tom Seaver would be the best example, even though we're not that much different in age. You know, of course, Tom pitched in, if I'm not mistaken, in the late 60s, and I really didn't get, and that's kind of his prime. From the late 60s to mid 70s, and you know, I struggled like crazy, as everybody did, against Seaver back then. So, yeah, I remember jumping in that batter's box against Tom and hardly having any success at all. You know, the first 20 or 30 times I faced Tom, and then as he got older and kind of changed his style of pitching, I got a couple off of him, but no, and then Gibson would be the same. I remember facing Bob Gibson. His last year, I'm thinking maybe that might have been around 73, and he was kind of on his way out, and I think I got maybe 12 at-bats against Gibson, and, you know, each of the at-bats, to look out at the mound and see Bob Gibson out there, you know, it gives you a little more butterflies than most of the guys you face. So Gibson and Seaver would be two great examples.
Yeah, a lot of people talk about how Gibson wasn't afraid to move you off the plate. I mean, that was his reputation. And, you know, one of the things I noticed, Mike, I was watching some of the old highlights of you, and I forgot that you stood pretty far away from the plate. And I don't know if that was always the case in your career. Why did you adapt that type of stance?
I did. And I can remember specifically when I started that, it was I want to say late 70s, I made an adjustment from kind of a neutral stance at home plate, and I backed up about 6 inches. Just one of the many experiments that I tried throughout my career, and it worked. It kind of opened up the inside corner for me. What I mean by that is when you stand off of the plate, any ball coming, any fastball coming, you know, near your body, or even a slider, so to speak, you have more room. You know, you don't feel like you have to pull your left shoulder out, and it kind of makes you, naturally makes you hit the ball up the middle into right field. And, you know, back in, I was watching, let's see, what was it? It was the Milwaukee Brewers and the St. Louis Cardinals World Series. What was it, 1983? You know how we're watching all those old, old games on TV now?
Yeah.
And almost every player that came to home plate, every hitter had a closed stance. If you remember George Hendrick, and the only guy that did not have a closed stance that stood out back then was Cecil Cooper. And, you know, he had that kind of laid his back bat real flat back and had that wide open stance. Now, every other player, Robin Yount, Gorman Thomas, Paul Molitor a little bit, they all had a closed stance with that left foot close to the plate and the right foot kind of hanging back. And we all wanted that. That was kind of the essence of keeping your shoulder in. Don't pull off the ball. Have your weight going toward home plate. Totally different style of hitting than what we see on a regular basis now. You know, now we see pretty much worse. You know, open for the hitters nowadays is kind of straight on. But almost all hitters nowadays have an open stance. And they may stride a little bit toward home plate, but they all seem to start off with a bit of an open stance. And so, you know, back then, you know, my stance of standing kind of far off the plate and kind of striding toward the pitcher or maybe even toward home plate was, you know, pretty normal. Maybe I stood a little further off than most people, but, you know, my stance was pretty normal. Actually, I had that stance through my greatest years, through my four greatest years.
Yeah, I mean, I noticed it. I noticed exactly what you were talking about those players from that era also not having the open stance. And one thing you do notice about today is that all anybody talks about is launch angle. I mean, you see it, you get the stats on it, all the analytics. And I was watching the video of you, Mike, thinking, you know, that's launch angle. You hit some high, long home runs, but nobody talked about it being launch angle.
Well, no, we didn't have that. You know, we didn't have that in our hitting mechanical vocabulary yet. You know, I don't like it when I'm doing the color for the Phillies on the weekends. I will be honest with the fans and say I don't like it, but I kind of understand why they teach it. I guess the first thing would be small ballparks.
Yeah.
Rather have the ball in the air than on the ground, because balls on the ground nowadays with the shifting defenses are generally, if they're pulled ground balls, are being pulled right into the shifting defense. And they also have analytics that prove that, you know, if three or four hitters come up in the row with the right launch angle and the possibility of the home run or the two-run home run or, you know, the double off the wall with men on base, and if no one hits a ground ball, there's a greater chance of scoring runs in that inning than if when we played with standard defenses, we used to like to drive the ball on the ground or hit the ball on the line, and the more line drive hitters you had, the more players on the team had high batting averages, and we felt, you know, that the more high batting averages you have, the more runs your team's going to score. Doesn't that make sense?
Yeah.
And nowadays it's low batting averages and high long home runs. Don't hit into many double plays and don't pull the ball into the shifts. So they're using their facts that they have based upon you know, all of the things that are loaded into computers and studied and What am I thinking about? What do they call the company that measures every ballpark, that has cameras all over the ballparks and is able to log every swing and every pitch and every angle and every, you know what I mean, that the announcers talk about nowadays? We didn't have that back then. You know, all we had was a guy sitting in the dugout with a chart, and they had spray charts for hitters. you know, back then, but they didn't have what I want to call computer printout spray charts that they have now. So, I mean, they got it down to a science. It's amazing. Last point on that is I was working in one Sunday working a game, and I looked down into the Phillies dugout, and I saw, you know, I saw like a counter, you know, by where the manager stands, and there were like five coaches sitting at that counter, and every one of them had an iPad in front of them. And so I tell you what, it's down to a science. And if you want to know which guy should pinch hit against a particular pitcher, it's not, you know, it's not gut feeling, or it's not the eye test or anything like that. It's it. Tell me who's our best hitter against this pitcher. And, you know, and the coach will say, well, so-and-so hits 280 and so-and-so has got a 400 batting average, and they send him up there. And it may look crazy. How can you spend this guy this early in the game, you know? And, some of the decisions they make look crazy to us announcers, but they're supported by facts that that they have that we don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's just so different. When every hitter is trying to hit it out of the ballpark, or they have the launch angle, that's so different than your swing, Mike, right? I mean, you guys were, hitter, right?
Joe, I go back to the World Series that I was talking about. I mean, I marveled at all of the, you know, all of the what I consider level swings, a bit of a downswing, the ability to hit a high fastball. You know, guys back then could hit high fastballs. And, the line drive swings, you hardly saw any big uppercutting swings. And, you know, of course, I will say that Ted Williams thought that the swing should have a slightly upward plane, and I'm not going to argue with what Ted Williams thought, but I think there were more players that that had level to downward plane swings when I played. Obviously, there's way more when we played than there are now. And, I still believe that's the way they should be swinging the bat now, because I hate to watch – you know, I hate to watch, 20, you know, combined 30 strikeouts a game.
Yeah.
You know, when I'm watching two teams play today.
We'll continue the conversation with Hall of Famer Mike Schmidt right after this. Jones goes back near the wall, shading the sun, and he dropped it. He lost the ball in the sun. Let's put the sun to good use at home with a SunPower residential solar system. Your SunPower elite dealer, SunFirst Solar, has a wide range of financing options, and they provide the finest customer service from start to finish, regardless of size or scope. SunFirst Solar offers the highest efficiency systems, newest technology, and the best warranty in the world. SunFirst Solar offers the most competitive price while not compromising on quality. This summer, let the sun heat your pool and eliminate your energy bill. Don't drop the ball. Call SunFirst Solar at 415-458-5870. That's 415-458-5870. And get your SunPower solar system today. You know, you mentioned the analytics and the modern-day manager, Gabe Kapler, who was the manager in Philadelphia.
Right.
I know you're familiar with him. He's now here in San Francisco. What do you think we can expect from him as a manager?
Gabe's a wonderful man, great communicator. He does lean quite heavily on the analytical part of the game today. Very, very smart guy. Very smart guy. And the only thing about Gabe that he loves his players, and he gives them a lot of leeway. You know, there's not a lot of dress code stuff. There's not a lot of the clubhouse is there. You'll see a lot of TVs and a lot of what you might see that we weren't allowed to do back when I played. When we traveled, we had to have a sport coat on. When we arrived at the hotel, that sport coat had to be on. You know, everybody looked really nice when we traveled. Well, now, you know, Gabe's teams will be able to wear what they want on airplanes, and there'll be jeans. And Gabe's philosophy is that if the players are happy, they'll play better.
Mm-hmm.
And on the discipline side, I think that was one of the things that hurt him in Philadelphia. I think the ownership and the general manager and the people that matter in Philadelphia thought that there was just a little bit too much freedom for the players in Philadelphia.
Yeah, maybe he changes that around a little bit, you think?
Well, it depends on if he learned that or when he was in Philadelphia, and whether he changed his philosophy on that. I do not know.
Well, we'll see.
We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. Now, there are some connections of you and San Francisco. In fact, you made your decision to retire in 1989 in San Francisco. Can you tell us a little bit about that, and maybe some Candlestick memories that you have?
Sure, a vivid memory of that. Let's see. It was Sunday afternoon. We weren't playing well as a team. We're on a West Coast trip. I was in like a 1-for-20 slump as a hitter. When you get in close to 40, you start daydreaming a little bit every now and then about how you're going to handle when you start to get to the end of your career. And unfortunately, when you start thinking like that, you are at the end of your career. And of course, Joe, I was lucky. I've made a lot of money. What was a lot of money back then, it isn't comparatively speaking to today, but I had made enough money. I my kids, the next couple generations of the Schmidts are going to be fine based upon, or at least I thought anyway back then. And, I had accomplished a lot of things individually as well as a team in Philadelphia. And what happened was kind of like I said, I used to pray, I still do. My spiritual life is very important to me. And I prayed that I'd get a sign or so to help me with my decision. And so I'm playing third base one day, and there was a man on first base, and Robbie Thompson. You probably remember Robbie Thompson. He had a hard ground ball to me. It was a nice little double play ball and went right through my legs into left field. And so I said, man, my reactions just aren't what they used to be. And boom, Will Clark hit the next pitch for a grand slam.
Ooh.
And when Will Clark trotted around the bases and went in front of me and touched third base, I said, I've just played my last game.
Wow. It was clear. It was clear to you.
So, yeah, and when I went to home plate, the next time I went to home plate, and this was kind of seventh inning, eighth inning or something like that, I was the only one that knew it, but that was my last at-bat. I knew that was my last at-bat. And as it turns out, I chopped a ball toward, I think it was Jose Uribe, at shortstop.
Yeah, that would be him,
and
man, yeah.
He bobbled it a little bit, and I beat it out at first base. So I'm standing over at first base, and they gave me a hit, right? So I'm over there, and I said, Tony Taylor was the coach, and I said, Tony, that was my last at-bat. For some reason, I wanted to share it with Tony. And, Michael, what are you talking about? He didn't think I was serious at all. So, yeah, that was my last at-bat. I don't know why I told him that, but I did. And I go around the bases, and as it turns out, I got another at-bat. The game got tied, and I got another at-bat, and Terry Mulholland was a pitcher in relief, and he walked me. So my last at-bat was that single. So I go after the game, I rush into the clubhouse, and I just tore my uniform off, ran over, got in the shower, way first into the shower. Most guys weren't even undressed yet. So I get in the shower, and Larry Shank sticks his head around the corner. He's our PR director. And he said, Mike, I just want to let you know they changed that last at-bat to an error.
That's not right.
I spent about an hour thinking that I got a hit in my last at-bat. Change it to an error.
Well, it's supposed to be the fairy tale ending, but it wasn't. But
then I had played my last game. I went to the airport, and was it Nick Leyva was the manager, and he got off the plane, and I said, Nick, I just want to let you know I'm going to retire. That was my last game, and so that got the wheels turning, and called back to Philly and told the owner and the general manager and everybody. And then when we went to San Diego from there to end the road trip, we had a team party, and I had a press conference. And so that was how it went down. I really wished it would have gone down more with me having that all happen at home in Philadelphia, so at least I could have played my last game in front of the fans. But, it was heartfelt. It was a decision I made with my heart. There was no politics involved, no hey, play one more year and travel around the league and get, you know, have Mike Schmidt Day everywhere you go and get gifts and things like that. Wasn't interested in that. So I never put the uniform on again after that as a player.
Inside China Basin continues with Hall of Famer Mike Schmidt in just a moment. We all know that solar systems make financial sense and environmental sense. And when it comes to choosing the best installation crew in the business, Sun First Solar should be your first choice. Sun First Solar has provided solar excellence since 1984. They are SunPower elite commercial and elite residential installers with a reputation for technical excellence, innovative design, fair pricing, excellent customer service, and end-to-end quality and competence. Sun First Solar is a family business devoted to treating their employees, customers, the community, and the environment with respect, and they are devoted to renewable energy and sustainability throughout the Bay Area. There is no roof or project that is too complicated. Sun First has successfully installed solar on Spanish tile roofs, metal roofs, and very steep roofs. They also have extensive experience in solar ground mounts and solar pool heating. Competitive pricing, expert consultation, and the best warranty. Go local and get your SunPower solar system from Sun First Solar today. Call Sun First Solar at 415-458-5870. That's 415-458-5870.
The 3-0 pitch. Swing and long drive! There it is! Number 500! The career 500th home run for Michael Jack Schmidt! And the Phillies have regained the lead in Pittsburgh, 8-6. And the Phillies dugout comes swarming out to home plate.
There are two moments that stand out that I wanted to ask you about real quick. One is 500th home run, because you had more emotion for that home run than we normally saw. And the other is just winning the MVP in the 1980 World Series with that team and individual accomplishment. You know, World Series where you hit 381 with two homers and seven RBIs. Those two moments, I would imagine, stand out the most for you?
Well, they definitely stand out. Of course, winning a World Series is, you know, The team accomplishments always seem to stand out a little bit more. Nice to have the individual accomplishment, but the team things stand out. 500th home run, actually, the anniversary was a couple days ago. Got a lot of texts and emails and things, YouTube videos and all kind of stuff. Kind of felt good to see those. A little emotion on that. That was a big home run. I needed five starting the year off, and got them pretty quick. And it was a 3-run home run that won the game for us. And we had lost 8 in a row or something like that. And it was a big home run for the team, which was a great thing. The emotion and obviously the build up to the 500th home run, and every time I went to home plate, everybody was wondering if this would be the one, and my wife was there, and I knew a lot of people were there that were close to us. So yeah, it came, you know, I could have choked like a dog and it could have taken 2 months to hit five home runs. who would know, but they came pretty fast. And, you know, the 1980 season, that was a clean sweep, so to speak. Had a great year that year, won the MVP and the World Series MVP. But I tell you, there were a lot of things, a lot of helpful things in the middle of that from teammates. I had a lot of big at-bats where I failed, and a guy would come off the bench and drive a run in, and you wouldn't even remember that I failed. So a lot of good timing in that year for me to accomplish what I accomplished. And they're two great memories.
You know, I remember sitting there with you in Arizona, and Barry Bonds came on the air with us on XM Satellite Radio when we were doing the World Baseball Classic. And at the time, it was interesting because the book Game of Shadows had just come out. And, you know, you're talking to Bonds, and this book is out, and, you know, he ends up breaking the record. So what were your overall impressions of Bonds, you know, the whole steroids era, and his candidacy for the Hall of Fame, which is really tied to Roger Clemens? Do you think they deserve to go in?
Well, accomplishments on the field, absolutely. And again, I don't want to speak out of school here. The whole steroid thing, you know, we all have our opinions on that, and the only opinions that matter are, you know, the sports writers that do the voting. You know, obviously we don't know. All we know is what we see. What, you know, what we look at somebody and how big they are, and wonder oftentimes if someone can get that big and stay that strong and heal that well, just by working out. I know we all wonder that. Barry Bonds is somebody that I never played against Clemens, but I played against Barry Bonds. Gosh, I don't know. You probably look at where our careers crossed paths. I don't know, for 3 or 4 years, maybe. He was with the Pirates, of course. You know, during my time of playing against him, and you know, Barry was not a big man when I played against him. He was a young, fast, the son of Bobby Bonds, and I played against Bobby Bonds as well. And obviously, great talent. But I did not play against Barry when he was a San Francisco Giant, and I didn't obviously play against him at least 3/4 of his career. And I just know that he had a great deal of respect for me because we talked a lot when we did play against each other. And we've done some things together. We both work for Franklin Batting Glove Company. I had a lot to do with Barry and his involvement with the company, and we traveled together a few times for that and went to sports shows and things for the Franklin company. And any picture you'll see of Barry, he'll have the Franklin gloves on. And just general friendship is what we had, and I would hope that someday that all gets ironed out and he and Roger and all those people in the Hall of Fame can come together and give him their just reward.
I mean, for me, Mike, if they take out the sportsmanship part, it's a no-brainer, but I think it's hard for the writers when they think about, you know, steroids, and it's also hard because some players you don't know, and then you're putting them in. It's a very tricky proposition.
It sure is. You know, there's just, if there's some way that the Hall of Fames could do it like the LPGA Hall of Fame, where after you get 25 wins, you're automatically in the Hall of Fame. it's so subjective, you know. I mean, we're coming up I believe there's a golden era voting in the Hall of Fame coming up this year, and you're going to look at like Dick Allen and Jim Cotton, and you think of those two names and you go, how are they not in the Hall of Fame?
Mm-hmm.
You know, when both of them have better statistics on the back of their baseball cards as many, many of the people in the Hall of Fame. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And is it fair? I mean, I just don't know. You know, one guy played too long, another guy has this problem, another guy wasn't very good with the media, another guy beat his wife, you know what I mean?
doesn't exactly know, fit just, the character, sportsmanship, integrity part.
Well, yeah. Exactly, and it means so much to somebody like that to have HOF behind his signature, and places you get to go, and things you get invited to, and additional money you'll make throughout the year, you know, making speeches and things like that. And you know, it's just too important for it to be so subjective.
Yeah. No, it's definitely a difficult type of question that you don't want to really think about. To finish up here, Mike, the Astros cheating scandal, I'm sure that didn't sit well with you, but, you know, in baseball, you're always trying to get that edge. So, yeah, what did you have on your mind when you heard about that?
You're not cheating, you're not trying.
Right. So what did you think about it? What do you think going forward what will happen here? You know, what should happen as far as, you know, players and retribution and all that?
Well, it's going to be interesting to see how that unfolds if this year, next year, whenever baseball gets underway again. I think the virus issue will have taken a great amount of heat off of that subject. The players have very, very vivid memories of that kind of thing. In the old days, if you could steal signs and relay signs in various ways, guys would pick up movements of pitchers and flaring their gloves or a different stride or just little nuances they call them tells in cards that pitchers or catchers or coaches might have and pick up something from the other team. That's been going on ever since the beginning of baseball. Relaying that has a danger. You know, if you get caught relaying signs from a set man on second base to the catcher, it could the retaliation for that was a fastball in the ribs or a fastball at the head or,
right.
Could lead to a lot of problems on the baseball field, but it's problems that the teams and players were willing to gamble for or gamble with, and that's always been in baseball. There's never been a computer involved. There's never been a relay of information electronically.
Right. This is the first time, yeah.
Yeah. I guess there has been, at Wrigley Field one time, if I'm not mistaken, was someone in the scoreboard picking up signs.
Right.
In this case, I don't understand specifically how it was done. I just know that somebody behind the dugout was looking at the center field camera and banging on something when it was, something other than a fastball.
Right.
I guess that would give you a bit of an advantage. Hitters sure look like great hitters.
Right, and I would think that it would be hard to be the one guy who steps forward and says, you know what, we're not doing this, right? I mean, that's the thing. I mean, yeah, everybody.
Oh, you mean
involved.
On the team? Yeah, yeah. The guy's saying, I'm not going to play on a team that cheats.
Right. I mean, wouldn't that be hard? If you were on that team, Mike, I mean, it would be pretty hard to step away from it, and I would think that it does help you a lot to know what pitch is coming.
Yeah, it does. It does, but there's always that element of not being sure. Ball starts at your head, and they told you that it was something other than a fastball. Oh, what happened? And
right.
You get hit in the head. They told me it was a curveball, and it wasn't. And so, yeah, just boys will be boys, baseball players. And there's a whole lot of stake, if you know what I mean, when you get into the World Series and something like that's going on. And I'm just glad I don't have anything to do with the repercussions. Golly.
Exactly. Mike, thanks a lot. It's been so great to hear your voice. I enjoyed working with you so much way back when in 2006. And I hope you have a good time playing golf and when the golf courses open up again, and be healthy and safe. And good luck to you, and look forward to seeing you on those Phillies broadcasts again, too.
Okay, Joe. Thanks a lot. It was so nice to hear your voice again, and we got some fond memories, and you stay safe as well.
That's Hall of Famer Mike Schmidt. Want to thank him for joining us. We'll be back again tomorrow, Tuesday, with another podcast as Sean Estes, the former Giants left-hander, now part of the NBC Sports Bay Area broadcast team. He'll be joining us, as well as Michael Duca, co-author of the book, The Baseball Codes. For now, I'm Joe Castellano. Thanks for listening to Inside China Basin on thesportsvirus.com.